Yeah. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share. That same type of feeling when you're feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. This is your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV, also featured on the antimedia.org/radio. I'm really happy to be back with you on this amazing Monday. I'm a little bit under the weather. I think I got somewhat of a cold, but that's not stopping me from coming here and, you know, talking about what needs to be talked about tonight. And make sure you also catch us on Wednesday. It'll be me and my awesome panel. We've always got different people on the radio line and different guests, and we've got a regular panel, which I'm going to introduce in a few minutes. And make sure you check out Anti-Media Radio 5 days a week here on UCY at the same time on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's actually 2 hours, and we're going to be doing 2 hours all week long coming up in the near future, I should say. I don't want to make any promises of when it's actually going to happen, but on Tuesdays and Thursdays with the host SM Gibson and Shannon Madden, they're going 2 hours from 7 to 9 Pacific time, I guess, which would be 10 to 12 on the East Coast. I don't know. I get my time mixed up. It's with all this time change and all that crap going on. I don't know. Anyway, 5 days a week here on UCY. If you miss any of our shows, or if you want to listen in the morning, you don't stay up that late, you can also catch the show archives on YouTube at UCY.TV or UCY.TV's YouTube channel, and you can catch all of our stuff. And on the radio tab on the website, we post the newest radio show, so you can listen there on your way to work in the morning if you feel like listening to us. And it's kind of important because we talk about stuff on a regular basis. Like, we'll talk about something on one show, and then the next show we'll be referencing the same thing we were talking about the show before it, you know. So it's kind of important. I mean, it's not a, you don't have to, but, you know, it makes it a little better if you do. Anyway, with that stuff out of the way, let me introduce first our panel. We've got Jake Anderson on the line. What's up, Jake?
Oh, not much. Just trying to catch up on these Panama Papers. And keeping my eye on old Donald Trump. Other than that, nothing new here.
Cool, man. Well, you know, there's a lot to talk about with these Panama Papers. We're going to touch on some of that tonight. And we're also joined by our amazing journalist, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Oh, hanging in there, as I mentioned. I got some, came down with some kind of cold. I don't know how it happened or where it came from or whatever. It's an inconvenience, but it's not, I'm not like in a deathbed or anything right now. I'm not even on any medicines or anything yet, so I should be fine to, you know, carry on through the show. Yeah, let's talk about these Panama Papers, because it's being called like the biggest leak, the biggest data leak of all time, and there's multiple angles here I want to talk about. First, at like surface level, I mean, these Panama Papers kind of expose kind of the shell game that goes on between a lot of these politicians and these very rich oligarchs, or you know, whatever you want to call these guys that are controlling things and hiding their money and bribing people and all that stuff. You know, on the surface level, it's like, dude, it's like there's a bunch of transactions and there's a bunch of fake companies being used, and who knows what they're actually being used for, most likely to like bribe people and, you know, do a bunch of shady things. Claire, you've written an article about this, which was published over on undergroundreporter.org, which is a sister site of the Anti-Media, and we've also covered it on the Anti-Media by Michaela Witten, who wrote about how a lot of these British politicians are being wrapped up in this thing as well. In fact, I think someone from David Cameron's family is implicated. I think it's his dad or something like that, who's now dead. But, you know, people from the prime minister's family is wrapped up in this thing. And I saw this hilarious tweet today from someone over in the UK, and it's like, it was Cameron issuing a statement where he's saying that, you know, his family's dealings are a private matter. And then the person making the tweet was like, oh, all of a sudden David Cameron cares about privacy. You know, because the UK is pretty notorious because it's gone full on Orwellian. In fact, their surveillance measures by the GCHQ is what their NSA is called over there. It's actually worse than what we got here in the U.S. In fact, some people would say it's like the testing ground for all the horrible surveillance that the U.S. is planning on using. It's like they test it out in Britain first, and then they roll it out over here. so that's kind of funny. But both Kayla's article and Claire, your article kind of made reference to how this whole leak is kind of being spun in a direction against, like, America's enemies. I mean, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, it was interesting because there's 2.6 terabytes of information, like 11.5 million documents that were leaked from this offshore law firm. And, you know, it implicates an awful lot of people from, you know, these countries, specifically, like, you know, Russia and China and Syria and all this stuff. Supposedly that some of that's to come still. But the biggest point here, I think, is that it was so obvious from the first reports that they were directly targeting those countries and kind of leaving major politicians from the U.S. and Europe and Western nations completely out of the picture, when we all pretty much can assume that they're probably taking part in the same sort of activities, having offshore accounts and kind of hiding money in tax havens. So, I mean, that was the thing that struck me first when I saw the reports. I'm like, oh, wow, a big data leak. And then, you know, there was like, there wasn't anything really juicy like you would expect there to be. It seemed like the whole slant in mainstream media was against the typical governmental enemies. So it seems like a big propaganda piece, in my opinion.
Yeah, it kind of did seem that way. And so it's kind of like all the people in NATO were kind of left unscathed in many ways. And all the people that aren't in NATO were like, oh, look how corrupt their governments are and stuff. And it's kind of like when Obama's over there in Cuba and he's trying to lecture Castro on human rights and stuff. When it's like, dude, why don't you go look in the mirror and see that you got the biggest prison population that's ever existed, and then come talk to me about human rights. And a lot of this stuff came from like Western press and stuff, and that was also a criticism that I saw coming out as well.
Sorry. But they also are like being gatekeepers for this information. Like the Western mainstream media outlets that have the information are not going to release all of it to the public. So we don't even have the ability to search through it ourselves. I mean, granted, that would be a huge undertaking. It took them a year to do this. But we don't even have the ability to double check what it is they're telling us, or to check for, you know, other people who could be implicated or other schemes going on or anything else, because they're controlling the flow of information. So that should be indicative right there.
Yeah.
I think what bothers me the most about stuff like this is that it's not that there's this, you know, corrupt global coup oligarchy, but that even though there is, it's that we don't even have a legitimate way of exposing it, because the people that are supposed to be, you know, like you said, disseminating this information conceal it because they're part of it, you know, like the mainstream media, they're in cahoots with a lot of these, you know, different agencies and probably companies too. So, I mean, that's, I think for me, that's the most disturbing part of it. One of the most disturbing parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, there was kind of a counter piece that came out rather early from a former whistleblower from Great Britain, and he was kind of saying the same thing. You know, the outlet that actually was in charge of the information release has a bunch of foundations that are kind of notorious for their corporate controls, like the Rockefeller Family Fund, George Soros, Open Society Foundation, the Ford Foundation, all of these, you know, typical organizations that people kind of laugh at for their total corporate nature, and here they are kind of in charge of this whole leak. So it's kind of a bit of a joke.
Now, so a lot of what this Panama paper does is it just kind of like lets us know stuff that we're already thinking. You know, it's like, okay, well, you know, governments are corrupt and they do a bunch of shady dealings, and oligarchs do a lot of things to hide their money and to dodge taxes and whatnot. And so it's stuff that we kind of already assume, but, you know, it is nice to have it on paper now and to know that, you know, okay, here's the proof that it's happening. You know, and so that's one thing. Now, one of the main points that Michaela was making on the anti-media was how this thing was been focused in on Putin. Like, almost all the initial headlines focused in on Putin, and it's like, Putin wasn't even implicated in this thing. It was people that, like, he knows. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, people that Putin knows are implicated, and, like, somehow all these news stories focused in on Putin. And so that itself goes back to what the point that you were making, Claire, is that they're definitely whether the leak was intended to or not, the media, the corporate media, is definitely slanting it in a way to damage Russia and to damage Putin on the global scheme, on the global scene. And, you know, everything has been going on over there with Syria, Ukraine, and all that stuff. And the West has been really struggling to find its footing over there. And Russia has been outmaneuvering NATO over there in Syria and Ukraine and a lot of these other places. And so now they're definitely turning to this kind of discrediting mass media kind of frenzy, I guess, which was stirred up here with the initial release of the Panama Papers. Now, I'm hopeful. I mean, as you said, there's like almost 12 million documents here. I'm hopeful that some stuff comes out for us here in the U.S. I mean, because that's what we want to know. It's like, we're in the U.S. Like, honestly, I think it's bad that Putin does bad things and people around the world do bad things, but I want to know what our government is up to. You know what I'm saying? So I want to see the stuff from the Panama Papers that talks about American politicians, American oligarchs, American businessmen, what they're doing. Because otherwise, I mean, it's the things that go on with Russia. I mean, that's on people in Russia. They have to deal with Putin. He's their, you know, he's their problem. Our problem here is our government. Our problem here is Bush. Our problem is Cheney. Our problem is Obama, Clinton. You know, all these oligarchs that are here now that are doing these things that are damaging us personally and affecting us individually. You know, and that's what I want to know. And so we also have a piece in the works, and Claire, you're working on this. It's going to be up tomorrow, and I'm really excited about this one and going along with these Panama Papers here. Because, you know, up until this weekend, I didn't even know Panama was a place where you know, they do this kind of thing. I know about, like, the Virgin Islands, and, you know, the in the Caribbean, there's island nations that where people have their offshore accounts and stuff, and, like, you know, we know about that stuff. But Panama is not even a place you'd think would have this kind of activity going on. But we're working on an article tomorrow about, well, if it's going on in Panama with this one law firm. Keep this in mind. All these documents, 11.5 million of them, come from one single law firm. And it's one guy that leaked it. Think about this. How many other law firms, how many other countries, how many other corrupt offshore dealings are there throughout the rest of the world? I mean, even in Europe, I mean, people do the same kind of thing in Cyprus. They have like offshore accounts. And as I mentioned, in the Caribbean, there's the islands out there that have their accounts and all that stuff. Claire, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think for one thing, I mean, you know, corporations, politicians, people, oligarchs, you know, the elites, whatever, people do this all the time. It's not revealing anything that's, you know, it's not a black and white illegal issue, but it's not exactly, you know, it's kind of in such a gray area that it really should be examined very closely. And it's, you know, don't get me wrong, it's good that this information has come out. I mean, we need to know this. I'm very glad that there's a leak. But at the same time, it would be nice if it was presented, as you were saying, in a way where we were able to really examine everybody, to know about our own government, to know about our own politicians and what's going on. And, it, you know, like you said, this is just one single law firm. And this amount, this volume of information came from this one place. Imagine how much more there is around the world. I mean, it would be nice to see, like, a domino effect and see if anybody else comes forward with something after this.
Exactly. And, you know, these kind of accounts, these kind of offshore accounts, shell corporations, whatever you want to call them, they can be used for multiple things. In fact, there was just a report that came out the other day on The Intercept, which is Glenn Greenwald's publication, that was talking about how foreign, you know, foreign billionaires are now being able to fund American elections by using these type of like shell corporations. You know, it's like any you know, a Saudi billionaire can have an American company, and then that American company, even though it's owned by a Saudi billionaire, can go ahead and like fund Hillary Clinton's super PAC or whatever, or Ted Cruz's super PAC, Mark, whatever, any of these candidates can be bankrolled by like foreign interests, like from other countries and stuff like that. And then they're using the same type of legal loophole in like these shell corporations. In fact, I read there was somewhere about one corporation that was funding Jeb Bush. It was literally created like a couple days before it made like a $12 million donation to his super PAC, and then it like and then his campaign ended like 2 weeks later. Like this kind of stuff is not right. I mean, it's being done because of legal loopholes and Citizens United and other things like that. It's not right. You know what I mean? Sorry, I had to drop the caller. He was making too much noise. Anybody wanting to call in, we're going to start taking calls in a little while. The call-in number is 718-717-8296. If you get on the line, make sure that you mute your microphone and make sure that your radio is turned off. And you'll hear us talking, and then we'll call you out by your area code, and then that'll be your cue to start talking. But, yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention that.
You know, there was something on this whole tax haven sort of subject. We wrote something last year towards the end of the year, I can't remember when, about Walmart doing exactly this to avoid, like, just, like, I think billions in taxes. You know, this is a very common practice, and they use, like, these tiny technicalities in the law to be able to do this.
Yeah, and of all people, Donald Trump has actually been the biggest one railing against this kind of stuff. In fact, he's been talking about how there's trillions of dollars overseas that you know, that's owned by American companies, but they don't bring it home because they're afraid they're going to be taxed on it or whatever. So you know, it's pretty well known that companies have these trillions and trillions of dollars overseas. I think Apple and Facebook both have like huge holdings overseas that they don't bring home because they'll get taxed at a high rate. And so, you know, this stuff has been going on. We've been knowing about it. Now the Panama paper kind of gives us, you know, a little bit of proof, a little bit of paper trail to back it up. But yeah, I mean, who knows? I think the number is probably endless. I wish DB was on the line because I'm sure he'd be able to tell us how many trillions of dollars are being, you know, hidden around the world by who knows, you know, in these trust funds. And, you know, there's old, family money out there, royalty money and stuff like that, where, you know, people on the books, it's like, oh yeah, Bill Gates is one of the richest guys in the world. But in reality, Bill Gates is nothing compared to some of these major, you know, this old money that's been around, and they, you know, how many trillions of dollars they have hidden in these kind of shell companies around the world. There's no telling, you know, so maybe the Panama Papers will help us get a little bit of a better idea of what's actually going on. Because we all know that the average working people are being kind of fleeced for their productivity and their money. And these wealthy people are taking all the money, but where's the money going? You know, that's the question. So The other thing I want to shift into a little foreign policy here is because these kind of accounts can also be used to do some black budget kind of financing of, you know, rebels, let's say, for instance, in Syria and stuff, that things that maybe we got familiar with because of Reagan and the whole Iran-Contra scandal and things like that, you know. So these kind of things, these kind of hidden bank accounts can be used for very nefarious reasons, whether it be political or bribing or just corporate stuff. They can be used to finance foreign policies that are secret, covert operations and that kind of stuff. I want to talk about what's quickly starting to become an overt operation in Iraq. And Claire, you actually wrote this article on the 2nd, on April 2nd, and we published it on Saturday. But this one is huge, and it didn't get enough attention. But apparently there's like 12 generals in Iraq, and it's like unheard of to have that many generals in one area, especially when we supposedly only have 5,000 troops out there. And so this kind of makes us wonder, and I think the number shot up to like 21 if you include like other like high-level staff and like, you know, bureaucrats from the military. So I wanted to talk about this because our promotional meme for the show tonight was a foreign policy meme. And this is a huge story, and I think it needs to be talked about more because, you know, Obama has been saying that there's going to be no boots on the ground in Iraq forever. I know they finally acknowledged that there was 5,000 troops and maybe there's going to be more soon. But we've covered on the anti-media relentlessly about Iraq and the presence of maybe not technically considered, maybe people that wouldn't be considered troops or army, but there's been at least 10,000 like military contractors that remained in Iraq even when Obama claimed to be pulling out. And now we know with the ISIS threat and all that, they put the at least 5,000 troops back in, specialists and consultants, or, you know, they have all kinds of different names for these people. They just don't call them boots on the ground.
Well, you know, officially there's only 3,870 troops on the ground in Iraq. But, you know, even the government says that it's 5,000, like, unofficially. Something's up, basically.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to the days when a general commanded, like, a bunch of troops? I mean, all of a sudden there's 12 generals in Iraq with only 5,000 troops? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's unheard of.
Yeah, it really is. And defense officials, they have tried to kind of just explain it that today's troops are more specialized war fighters, like they need the specialized oversight and all this, but it doesn't, any explanation they've given has been so vague, it doesn't even make sense. Like, there's nothing really explains this many generals for this few troops.
In your article, you mentioned this base that had gotten attacked, and it made news because I think the first or second American to die in this fight against ISIS. And up until this guy got attacked and killed at the base, it didn't exist, right? The
exactly.
U.S. had never even acknowledged that this base existed, and then it gets attacked by ISIS, a guy dies in there, an American dies there, and then all of a sudden it's, oh yeah, we forgot to tell you, we got this base in Iraq going on, and it was completely secret until now. It's like, wait, what? What else are they not telling us? You know, they got 12 generals in there. I mean, if that's the case, why not just throw the generals in at the front lines, have them fight? You know, if you got that many of them over there, throw them on the front lines, have them fight.
Yeah, I mean, this is just crazy. It doesn't make any sense at all. I think that the U.S. was saying for a very long time that we were flying missions or we were using intelligence and driving the missions that other people were flying, but we were saying that we did not have a base over there. And then suddenly, ooh, guess what? We have a base over there. I mean, you know that this is happening everywhere, and you have to wonder if this is the only one or if there are others. Considering there are 12 generals there, perhaps there are other bases we don't know about in the country.
Exactly, and so that's why this story, and it was originally came out in the Daily Beast. It was an exclusive report, and we covered it. And so this report does is it makes you have more questions. It's like, okay, well, obviously there's not 12 generals there to control 5,000 troops, so there's something they're not telling us there. And they had to just acknowledge this base that supposedly didn't exist up until a few weeks ago. And you know, so there's something going on in Iraq. Like, obviously the war never ended. Obama said he ended the war. That was bullshit from the gate. We knew that because of the presence of the contractors that were there, like the Blackwater types, you know, these kind of contractors. There was 10,000 of them that stayed in Iraq even when we supposedly pulled out. And now, you know, they acknowledge 5,000 troops. Who knows how many are actually there? So there's something they're not telling us, and there's a lot of questions that need to be asked. Hopefully we get someone like Chelsea Manning to come forward and maybe shed some light on what's really going on in Iraq right now, because we have no clue at all. So yeah, there's that. If anyone wants to look more into this and go down that rabbit hole, the title of the article, it came out on April 2nd, Why Are There 12 American Generals Leading the War in Iraq That Supposedly Doesn't Exist? So yeah, that's our foreign policy stuff. I mean, we go on this foreign policy stuff all the time. We got another great article on the anti-media called Why Patriotism is a Lie. It's by Chris Hedges, originally appeared on Common Dreams. That's a really good read. It's about this veteran guy that was over there at a Trump rally, and he got cussed out and assaulted and stuff by Trump supporters because he spoke out against the shit that Trump is saying. So, you know, support the troops, right? Except when they say stuff you don't agree with. There's another article here on foreign policy while we're on the topic about these UN peacekeepers. This one is really nasty. So these UN peacekeepers, I think they were they French? Yeah, French UN peacekeepers over there in Africa, which is, you know, Africa is like the place where imperialism just like never ends. It's just been ongoing forever, and we're still doing it over there. We got the UN over there. We got NATO countries over there, you know, knocking out Libya, and you know, we got a huge drone empire in Iraq. I mean, we're in Somalia, we're in all these places. We got our puppet regime over in Egypt. I mean, you name it, from South Africa to the Sahara. I mean, it's a big imperialist wet dream where they go and they jack all the resources, whether it's oil or diamonds or gold or even cocoa. You know, we're over there colonizing the place and taking all their shit. But you got these UN peacekeepers over there that are part of the French brigades or whatever you want to call them. And there's over 100 women have accused them not only of sexual abuse, rape, and all these horrible things, but now they're accusing them of forced bestiality. You know, and so this again is a UN. It's an organization. The U.S. is pretty much the major, you know, one of the major players. Us and Russia, and then you got all these other smaller countries that are kind of play a role in it. But we finance it, and so we're kind of paying. Our tax dollars are going to pay for forced bestiality over in the Central African Republic, which many people probably don't even know where the hell that's at, but it's somewhere in the center of Africa, and it's a quote-unquote republic. But they got troops on the streets over there doing horrible things, and I guess they're spreading freedom by doing what they're doing. But, yeah, the what's going on in Iraq, in Afghanistan, sorry. God, there's so many places that we're like got our hands in. It's like hard to keep them straight. What's going on in Africa, it's never talked about. I mean, we literally have an empire going on there, and nobody even knows about it. So that's something to look into, because if you want to know the true depth of what we're doing around the world, I mean, shit, we're in over 100 countries. We got over 1,000 bases. And so it's really hard to keep tabs on all the awful things going on, and, you know, where our money is being wasted and how it's being spent. I mean, I wish there was some way of knowing, like, okay, here's your tax bill, and here's what you're paying into, and here, you get to choose what you're going to pay. And then at least it'd be like, okay, cool. I'm not going to pay to force bestiality in the Central African Republic. I'm going to pay to give food stamps to the kid down the street that needs it, you know, but that's not how it works. You know, we pay taxes, and they use it for whatever the hell they want, you know, and it's kind of like that old saying back in the early days of the revolution, you know, it's like, no taxation without representation. And now it's like taxation and we supposedly have representation and it still sucks. Yay. You know what I mean? It's like, vote for Hillary Clinton. Yeah. So bad things going on with our foreign policy, the UN, NATO, bunch of bad actors. Now, you know, typically speaking, the UN isn't as bad, you know, as NATO, because at least the UN, it has like global representation, and like, you know, China and Russia also have, you know, voting powers within that. But at the same time, none of them wanted to do anything about Libya. They were all like, yeah, let's all go bomb Libya. It's all right. And you know, we all are finding out how that turned out, and it turned out really badly. on April 1st, April Fool's Day, I wrote an article about titled "The FBI Just Indicted Hillary Clinton Over Libyan War Crimes," and everybody believed it. I was like, dude, it's April 1st. Come on, guys. Like, and
you really took some guff for that, man.
Oh, dude, I took a beating for that one. And at the end, I mean, I even say, yes, this is an April Fool's joke, even though everything that I cited in the article was actually legitimate information. The only thing I made up was that she actually was indicted for these horrible things that she's done. So I do want to just go. I made three important points here in this article. And so I just want to touch on these before we move on from the foreign policy stuff. And maybe we'll take a few callers after that. I wonder if anyone wants to call in and give me some more shit about writing this thing. And I think we're going to be joined by DB in a few minutes too. So, so we all know that this indictment talk is actually going around because of her communications on her private server. And so the FBI is like investigating that stuff, and like she actually could be indicted for that, but she's not going to be indicted for the war crimes and stuff. I mean, anyone that believes that, I'm sorry to say it, but you may not know or understand the American justice system, or maybe you're just a little gullible, because everybody knows that Hillary Clinton is not going to be indicted for these horrible foreign policy things that she's done. You know, when you're at that level of power, you get away with that shit. When you kill 300,000 people in Syria, that's not considered murder. That's just considered foreign policy. And you're kind of actually, you get the press says, oh, you're experienced. You killed 300,000 people. That's actually a good thing, because you have experience. And, you know, Bernie Sanders, he's not as experienced as you are. Yeah, he voted to fund the Iraq war, but hey, he didn't vote to overthrow Gaddafi and stuff, so he's not quite as experienced as you are. So, I mean, she's actually. Go ahead.
Bernie Sanders won't kill people. Do you really want him as president?
Exactly. He'll vote against the initial killing. It's just that afterwards he may vote to fund it, but you know, at least he votes against the initial thing. And that, for that, I actually definitely give some applause for that, because he's the only guy that could actually stand up there in the presidential race and actually say, I voted against the Iraq war. Now, Trump says that he's been against it, but it's there's no real solid information about Trump's true stance on that, even though I'm glad that he says he's against it. But at least Bernie Sanders was up there and actually voted against it. He's the only one there that can say that.
You didn't see him kissing AIPAC's ass.
No, and Henry Kissinger's either. And so that's why I wrote this article, is because I wanted to, in a kind of a lighthearted way, on April Fool's Day, I kind of wanted to make an article that was so outrageously titled, but at the same time contain all facts. And that's all I did. All I did was use facts. The only thing I made up was that she was indicted for all these things that she's done. She hasn't been indicted for them, but she did all these things. So I just want to go through. There's three points I want to make here. And I'll go through these pretty quickly, because we're joined by DB, and I'm going to bring you in a few minutes. The first off was that Hillary Clinton looked the other way during a genocide of black Libyans in Libya during the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi, which, as we know now from her emails and from, you know, even just the stuff she did in the media, I mean, and then that video from CBS where she's sitting there joking about it. And I'm going to play the audio too once I talk about this. She jokes about this, but Clinton basically, one of her advisors told her, hey, look, there's a group of Libyan rebels that are killing every black Libyan they come across, and they're saying that they're foreign mercenaries, and everyone knew they weren't, but the media took that bullshit line, and Hillary Clinton even ran with it as well, and they looked the other way. They said, oh, well, you know, yeah, these guys are getting killed, but they're foreign mercenaries. They're hired guns brought in by Gaddafi to go kill his own people, and so it's okay if they get, you know, if they get summarily executed because they're black. And so these rebels that were doing this, basically what amounts to a genocide, ethnic cleansing, were being bankrolled by the U.S. They were being armed by the U.S. They were being aided by the U.S. and by, from what we found out later from Hillary Clinton's emails, mostly from her suggestions. I mean, Obama was like on the fence. Obama didn't want to do it. Obama didn't want to topple Gaddafi. Hillary Clinton pushed him in that direction, and I don't want to go all the way of saying it was completely her fault, but I guarantee you she was very much one of the people that pulled him over the fence and said, okay, yeah, let's do it, and they did it. And Clinton, you know, helped make that happen. I'm going to play this clip. This is Clinton talking about when she found out that Gaddafi was killed.
Yeah, apparently so. And then I'll see you
tomorrow. Thanks.
Wow. Unconfirmed. Yeah. Unconfirmed. No.
No.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
Really?
Unconfirmed. Yeah. We've had too many. We've had a bunch of those before. We've had, you know, have had him captured a couple of times.
So, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed videos. We came, we saw, he died. Did it have anything to do with your visit?
Ha ha ha. We killed somebody.
We came, we saw, he died. That should be her campaign slogan.
I mean, seriously.
And he went bad.
Yeah, we came, we saw, and we dropped a drone on his head. And then the people caught that. Our rebels that we were backing caught him and strung him up. They killed him and they hung him in a store window for a week.
You know what You know what he actually died from? He died from a bayonet stabbing to his ass.
His anus.
Yeah. So it's you know, he was not a good man, but to sit there and laugh so glibly about someone dying a horrific death while, you know, tens of thousands of other people are dying because of your policies, it just really goes to show you how crass of and arrogant of a person she really is.
I mean, I've seen this video because I've used this video in like three or four different articles because my favorite thing is to write about Hillary Clinton's foreign policy, and because it's just so bad. I mean, I don't think there's a war or an intervention or a coup or a government overthrow that she's actually been against. I think she's been for like pretty much everything ever. And she laughs about it. She laughs about overthrowing a government and the guy being killed. I mean, this is it's sickening. And she's sitting there joking about it as if it's funny, as if it's like, oh, yay. And she's like talking about, like, you know, obviously she's referencing we came, we saw, we conquered. I mean, it's a well-known saying. Well, we came, we saw, and he died. I mean, and she's laughing. I mean, it just – and to think that people are voting for this monster. She is a monster. There's no other way of putting it. Hillary Clinton is a monster.
That is so sociopathic to just sit there and laugh and to be so just cavalier about something like what actually happened. I mean, that should alarm everybody.
She makes Donald Trump look like an anti-war activist. I mean, she does. She does. She is that awful. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's oh my God, it makes me sick. On Easter, I went and hung out with some of my family, and some of my people in my family are like, yeah, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. It's like, well, their logic is, well, what's the other option, Trump? And it's like, oh man, you guys really don't get it. But it really is. It really is.
We're going to have the lesser evil argument about 1,000 times between now and the general election. I already had my first vicious one last week. I mean, I'm going to have to start copying, and I need a Google Doc and some statements that I can just copy and paste, trying to my debunking of the lesser of two evils argument.
Yeah, man. And so, I mean, this Libya thing is probably the biggest issue on her plate. I mean, this happened in 2009, and the whole idea behind it was that Gaddafi was slaughtering his own people. And that's why we had to go step in. You know what I mean? And so that's why we did what we did, because we were going over there to apparently spread freedom. And she's been pushed on this by the media several times afterwards. And she kind of just makes up stuff as she goes. And she's like, oh, well, Libya had a free election after we did what we did. Yeah, but the thing that she's failing to mention is they had a free election, supposedly. But that government that was elected it doesn't even maintain power. It doesn't even have control of the country. It's a bunch of warring factions going at civil war. And just because one tiny faction of that civil war was supposedly democratically elected by the U.S.-backed coalition doesn't give it any kind of legitimacy with the people of Libya. I mean, the country is a failed state. There's 50,000 people dead because of Hillary Clinton over there. And she laughs about this shit. And that's why I wrote this article on April Fool's Day to say that she was indicted for it, because she should be. She should be indicted for it, and even worse, because she's sitting there laughing about this shit. It's bad. It's ugly. It's horrible. I'm embarrassed that Hillary Clinton is an American, and I'm embarrassed to be an American as long as Hillary Clinton is considered one and not put in a jail cell for her actions. So I got two more points here. I'm going to be quick here because we don't got too much time left. The second point I made was about how also in 2009, Hillary Clinton more or less enabled a military coup in Honduras, down in Central America, which kind of course, falls in line with the Monroe Doctrine, which has been more or less this neoconservative philosophy of government that's been going on for well over 100 years now, where it says America has the right to assert its influence into every single government in the Western Hemisphere. And just to give you a little perspective, the Monroe Doctrine is why we've had an embargo on Cuba for the past 50 years. The Monroe Doctrine is why we're putting Venezuelans through a famine right now, and so that they can't even wipe their ass because they don't even have toilet paper. That's the Monroe Doctrine. And yeah, I mean, I don't think the Venezuelan government is perfect by all means. I mean, I'm sure they have their own shortfalls like every other government in the world does. But the reason why they're in such a very, very terrible situation is because of the policies that people like Hillary Clinton put on governments in the Western Hemisphere that choose not to fall under the sphere of influence of the United States. And this is what was going on in Honduras, and it's going on all throughout Central America right now. Anybody that's paying attention to Central American politics can tell you there's a very sharp left turn going on right now with the grassroots peasant type of governments that are rising up down there. And one of these cases was in Honduras, where a leftist was elected president in a fair election, and he started doing things that is against the neoliberal economic policy of privatization. And you know, he came in and he started collectivizing land masses and giving it back to the peasants, taking, you know, getting rid of the big Western corporations that have kind of monopolized on the farming industries in Central America and stuff. And we've overthrown governments for the same very reason, like several times in Central America. And so in 2009, Hillary Clinton allowed a military coup to go on in Honduras and pretty much endorsed it either directly or indirectly. And she continued sending military aid as the coup took place. And that's actually in violation of American policies. We're only supposedly allowed to send military and aid to democratically elected governments and stuff like that. Of course, I mean, that just is, it's one of those laws where it's like, hey, here's a law that you guys don't have to follow. But yet if some Joe gets caught smoking a joint on the street, throw him in the slammer. You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, do as I say, not as I do. And so on paper, it looks good. It's like, hey, look, we're you know, America is we love freedom. We love democracy. We're not allowed to fund, you know, bad governments. But then, you know, in reality, like, no one gives a shit about that law, and they do whatever the hell they want, and they fund bad governments all the time. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia. That's what they're doing right there. I mean, they're arming a bad government. Israel, they're doing that right there. I mean, you name it. Name a bad country over there that we're not funding. And so, you know, Hillary Clinton looked the other way in a coup in 2009. And similarly to what happened in Libya, Honduras has now become one of the most violent places in the Western Hemisphere. And so one of the points I actually made, and we've actually made this point before on the show, is, you know, you guys remember that big time immigration influx that was coming in last year in the summertime? And everyone thought there were people coming from Mexico, but when you look deeper, you found out, oh shit, they're actually coming from Central America, and nobody knew why. And now we find out it's because Honduras and other countries surrounding have become so damn violent, either because of the drug war or because the U.S. has destabilized them by putting in military coups or backing revolutions or overthrowing governments, that people are just trying to get out of there because it's become so dangerous for their women and children to live. They can't even live there without being under the threat of constant death or rape or violence or theft or robbery, all kinds of bad things happening. And so literally, one of the points I made in this article is that Hillary Clinton's policy in Honduras is actually now helping Donald Trump, because, you know, that happened in 2009, and ever since then, the country has fallen into chaos, and now this immigration crisis has started because of that. And all these people from Honduras are coming up through the southern border, and now Donald Trump is gaining popularity because, like, hey, let's build a wall, you know. And so literally Clinton's policy, not only here in and I'm going to talk about this on the next point too, but here in Honduras, it's helping Donald Trump because it's causing the immigration crisis that Donald Trump is running against. And so the third point I made here was about Syria. And again, this plays right into Donald Trump's hand. Clinton also backed the overthrow of the Syrian government, and according to her strategy, she wanted to overthrow the Syrian government to help Israel deal a strategic blow to Iran and their nuclear program. That's what Hillary Clinton, that was her strategy, was to topple a government because she wanted to help Israel deal with Iran. And so that kind of just goes back to her kind of, you know, hubris when she was talking about Gaddafi and how she just doesn't give a shit. When someone dies, she laughs about it. She topples a country, is responsible now for what started a civil war that's responsible for 300,000 deaths and 10 million refugees, all because she wanted to help one government deal with another government. I mean, this is, you know, the inhumanity here with Hillary Clinton. It just slaps you in the face. And for anybody, I swear, anybody that read this article, if they're still able to read this article and then still vote for her, I mean, there's something wrong with your head. I mean, you need to go to the doctor and have a CAT scan and examine your brain, because this woman is a monster, and she does not belong running for president. She belongs running from the law and put in the Hague for tried for fucking war crimes, dude. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is craziness. But again, this thing in Syria, I mean, think of all the talk about the Syrian refugees and, oh my God, we can't let the Syrian refugees, who knows if they're ISIS or not, you know? And again, this is Hillary Clinton's policies over there has led to Donald Trump's popularity. And I think that needs to be talked about more often. In fact, I mean, writing this April Fool's Day article gave me the idea that I'm probably going to write an article about Hillary Clinton is Donald Trump's biggest, the biggest aid to his campaign. And so I'm probably going to write that sometime this week once I start feeling a little better.
And vice versa too, Nick.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, Trump actually does help her in a way, because a lot of people that don't get on the internet that still watch TV see how heinous he is during his statements and go, well, she's a logical choice.
Yeah, dude, that's true, man. It's like, wow, well, and that's exactly how my family members were talking about it on Easter. It's like, I don't like Hillary Clinton that much and stuff, but God, the other option is Trump, and he's just ridiculous, you know. So, you know, we got to vote for Hillary. She's got the experience and this, that, and the other. And I'm like sitting there, and I'm just like trying not to scream at my family members. But anyway. Yeah, so there's that. And I'm sorry to anybody that thought this article was real. I guess I kind of thought that people would know it was a joke by saying Hillary Clinton was indicted for war crimes. I mean, we know that's never going to happen. So I was thinking people thought would know it was more of a joke. But anyway, at the end of the article,
you should put "and tripped and fell" at the end of it. That would people would know you were joking.
No, I mean, at the end. All right, so let me read you the last couple lines. It goes, So at the very end, I say, oh, Hillary Clinton has gone into hiding in South America and that the FBI is looking for her. And anybody with the whereabouts is encouraged to email the FBI, aprilfold@thefbi.gov. So, I mean, I kind of gave it away there. And I said, and then the last paragraph is, yes, sadly, this is an April Fool's Day article that amounts to wishful thinking. But all the information provided, except for the indictments and Clinton being in hiding, is 100% factual. Hillary Clinton actually did all those horrible things. And yet she's still somehow not behind bars. In fact, continues to run for the most powerful job in the world. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. The article did go viral, and I'm sorry that I fooled people with it. I thought people would know that it was an April Fool's Day joke and stuff, but whatever. I mean, the information still needs to get out there. Everything I put in there, and I linked to WikiLeaks and the emails, and I linked to studies from Honduras that show the violence, you know, and the emails about Syria and Israel and Iran and the State Department. And I mean, I linked to all this stuff. This is all real stuff that really happened. So I'm glad that it got all the reads that it did. And I hope people kind of read it, and then maybe it helped them. It dawned on them, like, damn, we shouldn't be voting for her. She should be indicted. She should be going to jail.
You put a Trojan horse out there, man. The free thought that I got taken in by the Free Thought Project, or like, first thing in the morning, I saw an article saying Obama signed executive order decriminalizing all drugs, and I got so excited, and I started Googling all over the internet for, like, oh my God, he's decriminalizing all drugs. And then I was like, oh, God damn it. This is April Fool's, isn't it? And you know what? No, Nick, I applaud you for that article, man. I think it was good, and I think you have to jar people out of their sense of comfort sometimes to really let facts sink in.
I guess so, man, and I hope that it had that effect on people. I know a lot of people were mad at me, but I think a lot of people got shocked by it enough where it made it.
I'm sure at least one conservative site ran it as truth.
Yeah, it got aggregated onto Zero Hedge too. I was like, what? So one thing that wasn't April Fool's, I actually saw Obama. He was given an interview, and Obama said that drug addiction should no longer be treated as a criminal issue, that it should be treated as a health issue. Did you guys see that?
Well, he'd know.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to what Jake was saying. I mean, you know, that's kind of big. I mean, Obama, for all the things that he's done, and he hasn't been the greatest president, and I think – I mean, the more I learn about Hillary Clinton, the more I realize that maybe Obama wasn't as bad as I thought, and it was actually Clinton behind the scenes pulling the strings, making him do a bunch of bad stuff. I mean, that's all speculation, but you know, Obama has kind of done some decent things lately on the drug war and the mass incarceration issue. I mean, he's pardoned a few people, not enough to make a dent or anything, but at least in a symbolic way. But he gave an interview where he was talking about how he thought that drug addiction should no longer be criminalized. It should be treated as a health issue, and that I agree with, and I'm glad Obama came out and said that.
Maybe that's to fall in line with all the studies that have been coming out saying basically that, you know, confirming what everybody's been saying for a long time, that the drug war has completely failed and has actually done more harm than good.
Yeah, and Claire, you actually covered that the other day, late last week, and that was a great article. It was a major, major study that came out. I forget the college... John Hopkins, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
John Hopkins,
a couple others.
Commissioned this big study, and it showed that the drug war has actually caused much more harm than good, and it's something that we kind of have been talking about for a long time. And then I think the week before that was when that Nixon official came out, and he was like, "Yeah, you know what? We created the drug war to silence the anti-war movement and to criminalize black people," and that was huge
crazy.
Too. That was huge too, man. And, you know, the drug war is falling apart at the seams. And I wouldn't be surprised in the next, I don't know, the next 10 years, we might see drug decriminalization across the board. I don't know. Hawaii's the first state in the U.S. to actually consider it. I mean, they commissioned a study to look into it. And so that's good news.
It ain't going to happen with Hillary Clinton as president. That's for
sure. It won't.
No.
So I guess we might as well just keep going on this foreign policy stuff. We got this article also on the anti-media from March 31st, which I think was Thursday, out of Yemen. Those not familiar with Yemen, because it's not talked about in the media basically at all. Yemen, it's kind of another situation like Syria, where the U.S. has backed a coalition which is being led by the Saudis to prop up a unpopular government that's been overthrown. It was overthrown like over a year ago, I think, and by this group called the Houthi rebels, which are supposedly backed by Iran, but they're kind of a popular movement, and they toppled the Syrian government. The guy that, I don't know if it's the president, the dictator, the monarch, whatever, of Yemen had to flee, and now he's living in Saudi Arabia under protection of the Saudis. But now, you know, we're kind of propping up a civil war in Yemen as well. And we've got this shocking report out of UNICEF, I believe it was, which is actually a UN organization, that says that a child is killed or maimed once every 4 hours in Yemen. And Claire, you actually wrote the article on this. What can you tell us about this?
Well, once the bombing campaign, it was the Saudi-led coalition doing a bombing campaign in Yemen, once that kind of got underway in March of last year, from that time, the increase in deaths has been sevenfold. So we have like tons and tons of children being killed, like six a day, they were saying. And this is being rather ignored, like in light of what's going on in Syria, which is just as much a quagmire, but for whatever reason, Yemen is flying under the radar, perhaps because, you know, Russia is so involved in Syria.
Well, I'll tell you why it's flying under the radar. It's because Russia is backing the government of Syria and Saudi Arabia is backing the government of Yemen. And so when Saudi Arabia and the U.S. back a bad dictatorship that's killing a bunch of people, the media doesn't care. When Russia backs a bad dictatorship that's killing a bunch of people, all of a sudden the media cares about it. And it kind of goes back to the Panama Papers we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It's like, hey, when our enemies have corruption, we talk about it. When our own government has corruption, hey, no big deal. Let's not mention it. You know, and that's exactly why we're not being – the media is not covering the thing in Yemen. The thing in Yemen is horrible. It's
right.
Horrible.
It's the Saudi-led coalition that we are backing in Yemen that is doing this, that is killing civilians at this rate, killing children at this rate. It's really, really tragic.
There was a report out of the UK, I forget which – I think it may have come from The Guardian, that actually said that there's U.S. and British – personnel that are in the control rooms that are overseeing the airstrikes over there in Yemen. So the U.S. is actually very much involved over there, and we're putting basically what we're doing in Yemen is the exact same thing we accused Gaddafi of doing, and we went and overthrew his country because of it. We're trying to put down a popular uprising. We're trying to put down a democratic movement via force, and it's a very bad thing to do. And we've overthrown plenty of governments for the same reason. But, you know, when we do it, it's apparently okay.
Don't forget it's a legitimate proxy war with Iran as well.
Yeah, it is. And so the Iranians are backing the Houthi rebels, which have basically taken over almost the whole country. There's only a few small parts of it left. Initially it was just the Saudis were sending them weapons, which they were buying from us, and they were sending it to the Yemeni government to put down this uprising. The uprising overcame that, and then the Saudis had to get directly involved. They put their troops and they started directly conducting airstrikes against the uprising, and they're using all American weaponry and American advisors and stuff. So this is a very bad thing that people don't really know about, that we need to know. You know, we need to know what we're doing. And again, earlier on the show when I was trying to talk about Africa, I was like, oh, this thing going on in Syria, oops, I mean Afghanistan, oops, I mean Africa, and oops, I mean Yemen. I mean, where aren't we bombing people? I mean, it's bad. It's really bad. We need to make America great again by not bombing people. How about that?
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I think it would. And I think it'd make a lot less terrorism. It'd make a lot less people hate us. And maybe we could travel around the world and not be ashamed of saying you're from the U.S. How great would that be?
Sorry, Nick. I got distracted, but Claire shared some video about Sarah Palin on Facebook that just made me want to die. Thanks, Claire. That's great.
that hurt. I think I killed brain cells watching that.
Yeah.
I didn't even listen to it. I just read the subtitles.
I'm sorry, but
sorry, a little off topic.
The U.S. has become idiocracy, and the guy that created it has even said, like, "Oh shit, man, I didn't mean for this to be a documentary."
Just think about this: one bad random decision by John McCain, and now we have to put up with Sarah Palin for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, exactly.
If he hadn't chosen her as his running mate, we would not even know her damn name.
Unfortunate. It's very unfortunate.
Her and Bachman should start their own party with Hillary kind of like in the lead.
That'd be great.
Well, I mean, Hillary's actually intelligent, so that I mean, there's just kind of gradations of evil. There's idiotic evil, there's smart evil, there's so many flavors of evil going on in America. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and Hillary
is conniving at evil.
I was going to say she's evil.
Yeah. Yeah, evil. That's a new Ben and Jerry. That's a new flavor there.
There you go. Oh man. Well, I'm glad we got through this show, even though I'm sick.
What's DB's take on the Panama Papers? I want to hear it.
Well, I mean, you know, it's really convenient who's releasing what information where, and if you look at what China and Russia are releasing from the same sources, they're going after the Western guys, especially Vatican connections. So I don't know, man. It's an airing of everything. I think there's a financial reset coming. I think the militaries of the world are about to pull a coup. I don't think what we thought is coming. I think it's something totally different.
Well, let's see what happens. Let's see what else comes in these Panama Papers. Thank you all for tuning in. Catch you live in the video.
Here we go. Go through the stereo.